wasn't in that men's meeting, but there was a second men's meeting that was in the little room that has men's on the door. And the age range of our men's meeting was much broader, and we had a little one that was doing his business and explaining how I kind of pictured, he was talking about you wrap it around your fingers and something about a thumb, and it went on and on. And I think there's going to be a second men's meeting in this room, and Dennis suggested maybe there'd be a bit. Dennis was there, he was invited, and David was invited to the meeting, and I think there's going to be a video. We couldn't see the actual thing that was going on, so there's going to be a follow-up meeting. So we hope you can all make it to that meeting. Well, for those that don't know me, I'm John Monahan. With me is my wife, Kathy, and three of my four children, Daniel, Bonnie, and Molly, and our oldest, Patrick, who's going to be 24 March 31st in about a week or so, is back home working, so he couldn't make the trip with us. We're from a small congregation in Tonganoxie, Kansas, T-something, Kansas, and we have about 20 in our group. It's a family. My wife's maiden name's Miller, so it's basically the Miller family and five or six others that meet weekly there, and we're small but strong in spirit, I think. And we came out to see my son Daniel at Kuiper College over in Grand Rapids Wednesday and Thursday, and stayed with Aaron Leedy, Leedy's daughter, and then spending last night and tonight with Jeff and Sharon, and really appreciate their hospitality and really appreciate the time to be here in the service today. It's a wonderful atmosphere here. I almost think of it kind of as a sister church in my mind, just my own personal thought, knowing a lot of the folks here and some I don't. But so greetings from Heartland Church of God in Tonganoxie, Kansas. And as was mentioned, Passover is in less than 2 weeks. We'll be celebrating it on Thursday night in just less than 2 weeks. And the Holy Day season is a wonderful time of year. It's awesome. The spring Holy Days, and then Pentecost, and then the fall Holy Days. And I don't know about you, but I find my life, I kind of go like this. The Holy Days come, and my energy of my faith swells. And then there's sort of a letdown, at least for me, and then it kind of bottoms out. Pentecost might come. And then it happens and goes down again, and then it goes up at the fall Holy Days, probably the highest. It's longer, and everybody's together from across the country. So my faith kind of goes like this throughout the year. And my faith kind of goes like this day to day, too. There's ups and downs. And sometimes, and we're told this time of year in 1 Corinthians to reflect on ourselves and take inventory of who we are and what we are and how we think and act. And in the Holy Day seasons, we draw close to God. It's natural. But there's times when I'm distant from God, and I sometimes will feel like I'm separated from God somewhat. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. Why do I, and you might feel some of this at times too, why do I feel at times separated from God? So I want to talk about three things. One, what causes that separation? Two, the parallel between the Exodus story at this time of year with Passover. The Exodus story, the nation of Israel being led out of Egypt by God the Father, by the being that became Jesus, but led by God, by his power. And the parallel between that story and our personal faith walk, and some powerful clues about that separation and how we can prevent it. And then thirdly, how we can prevent that separation. But first, I have an exercise for all of us. If you're able to, if everybody would please stand up. And remain standing until I instruct you to sit down. And I'm going to mention three ways. This isn't the only three ways, but three ways that we can become separated from God. These are three ways that I felt in my life that I sometimes feel separated from God. These may not be the ways you do. And maybe you could add to the list. I think there's many ways. So after each one of these, I'm going to give a conditional instruction. And if you meet the condition, then you can sit down. But if you don't, then remain standing until at the end I'll have everybody sit down. So there's three things. One is, we'll call, human weakness and pride. I think they go together somewhat. just like Paul, who said he did the things he knew he should not do, and those things he knew he should not do, he did. Just like him, I sometimes feel the pulls, the lusts of the flesh, and instead of calling upon God to deliver me from whatever struggle I'm having, I dismiss him, and I think I can do this myself and overcome, and I fail. And just like Moses, who struck the rock at the waters of Meribah, he was given specific instructions to follow God with specific things to say at that point, and he evidently dismissed God and did it on his own, and he was greatly reprimanded and suffered terrible consequences for that one act of human weakness and pride. I think Moses thought, I could do this myself. So the first conditional instruction is, if you've never had a moment of human weakness or any prideful thought in your life of, I can do this on my own, I don't need God to help me in this moment. If that thought has never happened to you, then I want you to go ahead and sit down. Okay, and the second one we'll call having the wrong priorities or spiritual laziness. And this is couched in what I'll call the aholics. You can be a workaholic. You can be a familyaholic. You could be somebody that spends all their time and energy serving their family to such a degree that they neglect God. They're doing a good thing, but their life is so consumed with serving that they have their priorities maybe a little mixed up. You could be an exerciseaholic, a fitnessaholic. If you're a fitness person that takes that to the extreme, to the detriment of your relationship with God, then you kind of fit this category of maybe having the wrong priorities. One of the biggest problems we face when it comes surrendering our all to Christ is that we become too concerned with the worries of this world. So the second conditional instruction is, if you've never in your life had the wrong priority, or if you've never had a sense of spiritual laziness, because these things, in my life, it's my family, my job, church responsibilities. We live on a small farm. So sometimes I get to a point where I'm too tired. I don't have the energy today to read my Bible or pray, so I'm going to do that tomorrow. So if you've never had that laziness in your heart because of the worries of the world bringing you down, or you've never once had the wrong priority in your life, then go ahead and sit down. And lastly, we'll just call it simple, plain old negligence. Now, there's times, I'm speaking about my own life, you may have, I don't know if you're all thinking about some of the things you might struggle with, but in my life, I sometimes don't lead my family in a spiritual sense. I'm not the spiritual leader of my family that meets the degree of care that my wife would like of me, or for that matter, that God would like of me. And I just don't meet the standard. And I'm human, but I can do better at that. So this third conditional instruction is, if you have always met the standard that God has placed in your life, and we're all have placed in our life to be the spiritual leader of our own life, and if you're married and you're a husband, you're to be the spiritual leader of your home. So if you've never had that idea in your mind that you didn't meet that standard, then go ahead and sit down. So for the benefit of anybody that might, I don't know if this is being recorded, but just take note that those that all stood up at the beginning of this exercise are still standing. So I know who I'm talking to now. So we've made that distinction. So you can all please sit down and turn with me to Exodus 14, verse 13. And in a nutshell, this is how we can rely on God. Exodus 14, 13. But Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today." Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. So if we can do this, this is sort of the hook of my message that would normally be left to the end. But if you can remember nothing else of what I'm saying today and remember two things. One is, if we can completely surrender to God and take our fearful and weak-minded mind and place God's powerful and conquering spirit in it. So if we can, and that's surrendering, if we can take on God's will in our lives and surrender and thank. So a 1-2 punch. If we can surrender and thank, remember, surrender and thank. Surrender and thank ahead of time, ahead of the situation that might cause you to struggle. Because then if we surrender and put God's will and power into our mind, he will deliver us, just like he delivered the nation of Israel. Because we cannot deliver ourselves. I'm going to fail every time. But we really try hard sometimes to do that. And that's what separates me in my life from my God when I try to think that I don't need him. For all those reasons I mentioned and more. And our struggles, they manifest themselves in our lives as fear. Fear makes us distant from God. But if you think about it, it's our weakness and our fear that makes God want to deliver us from our weakness and fear. If we weren't inherently weak and fearful, God would have no place to work in our lives. So when we're like that and we admit it and we surrender, and then let God's power work through us and glorify him, that's the way it should work. We have to replace our weak and fearful mind with God's power and conquering spirit. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians. We'll read a little bit about Paul's struggle in 2 Corinthians 12. In verse 9, and the context is that Paul had a thorn in the flesh. He had something that bothered him most of his life. He wrote this letter later on in his life. He had struggled with something in his life, and he went to God three times and asked God to deliver him from this thorn in the flesh. And the way I read that is, it was Paul saying, God, deliver me. God, deliver me. God deliver me. It was Paul's will that he be freed from whatever it was that was bothering him. And this is what Christ said in return. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. So God's glory will be done in our lives when we surrender, admit that we're weak and fearful, and accept his will in our life, and leave our will out of the picture, and just do what he directs us to do. I mean, he instructs us through the word of how to live our life. If we will surrender to that and do that fully, we'll be a lot better off. Now, that second thing I mentioned to talk about is our life, our struggle, our Christian walk has some really strong parallels to the story of the Exodus, the nation of Israel, about this time of year. And we're going to touch on just a few highlights of the story. We're not going to read the whole story, just some highlights. I want you to do two things as we read it. Anywhere that it says nation of Israel, God's people, Israel, whatever those terms are that identify who they are, I want you to put your personal name there. And whenever it says Egypt or Pharaoh, put the thing you might be thinking of after we did that exercise, the problems in your life that you struggle with that are your besetting sin, the things that you grapple with that are lifelong struggles. I know we all have them. We were all standing at the end of the exercise, so they may not come and go as frequent for some people. So your name, where Israel's mentioned, and your struggles, where Egypt and Pharaoh are mentioned. And let's begin in Exodus 12, and we're going to identify, first of all, who we are. Verse 7 of Exodus 12 says, moreover, they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintels of the houses in which they eat it. And then skip down to verse 13. And the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. I was reading a commentary about this story, and there's one school of thought that the blood on the doorpost may have been on the inside of the doorpost, not on the outside. symbolizing that it's on the inside of our heart that Christ shed blood covers our broken heart. And when we see that, especially at this Passover coming up, we're reminded of his redemptive power to change our lives. So when the Israelites might have been looking out the door from the inside, they were reminded of the blood that was going to deliver them from the death angel. I'm not sure if that's true or not. It kind of makes some sense, because if God knows every hair on our head, and he knows when a sparrow falls, and he directed that death angel to do what it did, he didn't have to know those people by a sign. He knew who they were from what was in their heart. And we know the story. God spared Israel. They stayed inside until the death angel passed over. God led them from Egypt. They departed in haste. He led them by a pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day. And it was God that did all of it. God did it. All the Israelites did that we read there a few minutes ago was they stood still, stood and watched the salvation of the Lord deliver them from Egypt. They basically just, like we should do, they just followed instructions. They didn't really do anything. They just followed the plan. So when we stand, when the way we do what they did, I think, is when we practice our faith. When we live out our faith, we're standing and watching God deliver us, putting his will, his conquering powerful spirit into our weak and fearful mind. And it requires us to completely surrender to God. And it reminds me of a story of a naval captain. He had just received his rank of captain. He was on the ship that he was commanding for the first time. And it was late at night. He was on the high seas, and it was up on the brig or the command post looking out the front of the ship. And he had his communications officer with him. It was the middle of the night. It was foggy. And he noticed in the direction they were heading a faint light flickering off in the distance. And he was a little concerned because they were heading towards the light. So he tells the communication officer, he says, send a signal to the other ship and tell them to change course 10 degrees north on course for collision. So the communication guy sends the message, and they wait. And a minute or so later, the signal comes back from the light, and it says, you change course 10 degrees south on course for collision. So this captain, who's starting to think, I'm a captain. Who are these people? I'm going to let them know who I am. So he's getting a little bit irritated, starting to pace back and forth on the command post, and he tells the communication officer, send them another message. Tell them this is Captain Smith, and I command them to change course 10 degrees north or suffer the consequences. Send that message. So the guy sends the message over, and a couple minutes later, the signal comes back. This is Ensign Jones, new recruit in the Navy. You change course 10 degrees south, or you suffer the consequences. And it came back, and the captain is just furious. And he says, okay, we're going to end this once and for all. Tell them this is Captain Smith aboard a U.S. battleship. Change course or be destroyed. And they send the message, and the light's a lot closer. They're getting really nervous. And the light signal comes back and says, this is Ensign Jones, and I am a lighthouse. So what do you think Captain Smith did? He surrendered to Ensign Jones. He did what he was told to do because he was in the wrong. It's kind of like the difference between commitment and surrender. I can commit to praying more. I can commit to reading my Bible more. And my notions might be noble and upright and all that. But in practice, I'm probably not going to succeed all the time if I'm just committed. But if I'm held up at gunpoint and a guy pokes a gun in my back and says, put your hands in the air, I'm not going to explain to him what I'm committed to. I'm going to do what he says because I have no choice. I have no choice in the matter. And I think we have to get to that point in our life that we completely surrender to God because we have become a slave to Christ. We have no choice in the matter. Let's look at a couple of scriptures about surrender. Let's go to Psalm 51, and we'll read just two short verses. David, after he sinned with Bathsheba, and he was broken in spirit, and he was surrendering to God. And this is what he said in Psalm 51, 16 and 17. "For you do not delight in sacrifice, otherwise I would give it. You are not pleased with burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." And then another one over in Psalm 55, in verse 22, "Cast your burden upon the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken." Sounds pretty powerful. And back to the Exodus story, let's read just a few highlights, four or five verses about that power that can deliver us if we will only surrender. We'll start in Exodus 13. This thought about God's power is repeated. I don't think I even got all of them, but beginning in Exodus 13, verse 3, it says, "And Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you went out from Egypt, from the house of slavery, for by a powerful hand the Lord brought you out from this place." By his powerful hand. In verse 9, "And it shall serve as a sign to you in your hand, and as a reminder on your forehead, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth, for with a powerful hand the Lord brought you out of Egypt." And then again in verse 14, "And it shall be when your son asks you in time to come, saying, what is this? Then you shall say to him, with a powerful hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt from the house of slavery." And keeping that personal perspective on this story, Egypt and slavery is the things that we are beset with. And then verse 16, "So it shall serve as a sign in your hand and as phylacteries on your forehead, for with a powerful hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt." So what about those times that we're, spiritually speaking, humming along, fat, dumb, and happy? Our baptism's behind us. We're marching towards God's kingdom, and he still has our back. Encouraging, the very next verse is very encouraging. In verse 17, it says, "Now it came about, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and they return to Egypt." He was directing them around harm's way. He was sort of cutting them some slack and giving them a break. And just like for us, it says in 1 Corinthians 10:13 that no temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide a way of escape for you also. He knows my struggles, and he knows your struggles. And if we will surrender to him and put his mind in us and his will in us, then he knows maybe he's going to cut us a break. And instead of having us face what's troubling us, maybe he's going to give us a way out around the issue temporarily, and cut us some slack and give us a break there. And the only way we can do that is if we are completely surrendered to him. Look in verse 21 of Exodus 13. "The Lord was going before them in a pillar of cloud by day to lead them on the way, and in a pillar of cloud by night to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night." And just like he led the nation of Israel, I mean, I take that as always. He led them at day, he led them at night, he protected them, he gave them light to see at night so they could see what was going on. So it's a wonderful thing that God has our back, but we have to be very careful. Satan, just like Pharaoh, he'll not let up. So in keeping this on a really personal level, let's read Exodus 14, beginning in verse 8, and we'll read from 8 to 11. And thinking about you as Israel and Egypt as your sin. "And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. Then the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and chariots, Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth in front of Baal-Zephon. And as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? That's fear talking in our life. When we question God, it says to be cheerful and thankful in all things and count it all joy. If we question God about what's happening to us, we're not surrendered to his will. He's got a purpose that we maybe don't see at that point. And the Israelites were fearful when the Egyptians were marching on them. And we can become fearful when whatever we're struggling with overtakes us. We don't want that to happen. So there's a strong parallel between these two stories. And back to the original verse, to stand still and watch the salvation of the Lord deliver you from Egypt, deliver us from our struggles. And the good part, the part of the story, the personal part that gives me hope and courage, look what the Egyptians, the bad guys, look what they thought as God was parting the Red Sea. Go to verse 24 and 25 of Exodus 14. And it came about at the morning watch that the Lord looked down on the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud and brought the army of the Egyptians into confusion. Think of Satan. And he chased their chariot wheels to swerve, and he made them drive with difficulty. So Satan said, let us flee from Israel, for the Lord is fighting their battles. The Lord is fighting for them against the Egyptians. As soon as Pharaoh and the Egyptians realized that God was fighting that battle for them, they wanted to get out of there. Likewise, when we surrender our will to God, and Satan sees that, and sees that God is the one that's doing it and not our will, then he's going to flee and leave us alone. But we have to submit completely. And then verse 30, the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And as we're wrapping up, if you'll turn over to Psalm 46, a couple more scriptures. Talking about God being our refuge and our stronghold. Think about battles and gallant things and heroic things. It says in Psalm 46, verse 8, this is what God does for us. Come, behold the works of the Lord. He has wrought desolations in the earth. He makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire. Cease striving and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. He's our refuge and our stronghold. So in this Passover season, let's remember we can prevent these feelings of separation from God by surrendering our will and accepting God's will. He delivered the nation of Israel from Egypt, and it was God's power that did that. All Israel had to do was stand by and watch. And we practice our faith when we stand and watch. We surrender and thank. So what about you? Have you completely surrendered to Christ? Or have you made a half-hearted commitment? If we would only surrender our will, accept God's will, let him fight our battles, we'll then be able to speak the words that the nation of Israel and Moses sang to God in Exodus 15, the song of Moses and Israel. And we're going to sing that here in a few minutes, I think. And as, in closing, if you'll turn over to Psalm 34, we went to the chapel service at Daniel's Piper College yesterday. And these verses were read, and they're really inspiring. It says in Psalm 34, verses 4 through 8, I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked to him and were radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and rescues them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. So thank you for inviting me to speak. Thank you for the chance to share God's word and speak these words to you. Be of good cheer. God will fight your battles.